Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Extreme Rules is just a couple of days away, and I'm bringing in my co-host Anthony DeMarco to give you guys a full preview with predictions. Let's get this show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Extreme Rules is this Sunday, and great show for you as always whenever I bring a co-host in. This week it's Anthony DeMarco, and it's all about Extreme Rules. And of course, the biggest talking points that we haven't got a chance to talk about, like Kevin Owens turning babyface, AJ Styles turning heel, Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman being appointed in their new executive producer or executive director positions, whatever it is, and Undertaker's return, Cesaro and his new, well, kind of new gimmick. I mean, we just run the gamut as always. And of course, we give our predictions and thoughts for the Extreme Rules pay-per-view in just a couple of days. So you're going to want to listen to that. We are extremely thorough in our analysis, at least I believe so. And so you will enjoy this one. As always, you guys know that every time I bring a co-host on, it seems to run a couple hours, and this show is no exception. So if you like long podcasts, this is right up your alley. One thing I would like to do before I get started is give a shout out to Minty Jeff. He wanted me to give him a shout out. He left a very positive review for me on Apple Podcasts. So Minty Jeff, thank you very much for your kind words. I'm glad you enjoy the show, and thank you for your 5-star rating. Much appreciated. Also, guys, check out WWEPodcast.com for all of your podcast needs and articles. I just published a new article today, not by me, but one of my awesome contributors, about Stone Cold and his relation to Kevin Owens. And the Kevin Owens turn that we all saw with this past Tuesday night on SmackDown Live, him stunning Shane McMahon. But there's a lot more to it than that. So definitely give that a read, along with all the other articles that are continuing to pile up on the website from my great contributors, which I wouldn't know what to do without. You guys are awesome. And thank you for all you guys do, and all your support, and all the readers too, which make it a success. So one last thing, guys, if you don't know where this show lives, by the way, some people actually don't know, you can find it everywhere. I try to avoid saying this in most shows, which I have been doing pretty darn good at lately, but you guys can find this on iHeartRadio, Spotify, CastBox, like all the obviously on Apple and Google, but some of those side apps or secondary podcast apps, I should be there as well as SoundCloud. Just so you guys know where I live, tune in radio as well. So one other thing, too, I wanted to let you guys know, I've heard some of the recommendations that I shortened my intro. So I have done that. If you guys listen to it, I actually took about 20 to 30 seconds off of my intro to this show. I know that it got a little bit long, so I took out a little bit of it. And it's only, if I look at it, 35 seconds, which is a little more manageable. So I hope you guys enjoy that my intro isn't as long. You guys don't have to keep hitting that skip button. And I understand. So, all right. Well, guys, without any further blabbing, I'm going to get to my conversation with Anthony DeMarco about Extreme Rules this Sunday and tons of other talking points. Guys, just kind of strap yourself in. Maybe lay back on the lawn chair if you're watching or listening, rather, to me in the sun. It's hot out, whatever it may be. Sit back with a cold one. This is a long, long discussion, but a very good one. So take a listen. Enjoy. Everyone, enjoy your pay-per-view this Sunday. I will be trying to live tweet throughout the show and doing the best I can with that. Sometimes I watch it on delay, but I will try my darndest to live tweet throughout the show, and I want to hear what you guys think as well. So, all right, guys, here we go. As always, enjoy. I'll talk to you next time. Okay, and welcome to the official Extreme Rules 2019 preview slash prediction show with my co-host Anthony DeMarco. Anthony, welcome back. It's great to have you on a very busy week.
Yeah, very, very busy. A lot to talk about, and I'm excited to get into it.
And just so the listeners know, I guess we have some pretty inclement weather up there in Montreal, Canada. So we are going to try to get through this as best we can with hopefully no interruptions down here in upstate New York. We're dodging it so far, but yeah. So if you could try to stay online with us the best you can, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be able to get through it. You know, up here in Montreal, we're used to the bad weathers, not usually the bad thunderstorms, but changing it up. But no, we're good old Canadians. We know how to deal with the weather.
Yeah, that is true. Usually, like you said, more with snow, ice, and whatever else happens up there. But all right, so now the last time we talked, we did not have the biggest news coming out of the wrestling world probably all year, and that is Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman, who have been assigned their new roles, executive roles for Raw and SmackDown Live. And you know, I've given my thoughts many times on this show, so I won't really have any additional input. But what were your thoughts? I've been curious as to what you've been thinking about this move.
I loved it. I got the news report on my phone, and the first thing I did is I screenshotted it, and I sent it to about like 7 different people. And a lot of people I sent it to, in particular one of my best friends, who doesn't watch anymore but did watch it with me when we were growing up in the Ruthless Aggression era, and he automatically, his intrigue went up. So that says something about what these two guys meant to guys like me who grew up in that era. I grew up with Paul Heyman on SmackDown, and I believe he was the lead writer on SmackDown when he was the on-screen general manager, and Bischoff was on Raw, and like we know what they did in ECW and WCW respectively. And given how poor the product has been since, I would say since WrestleMania, it's really been pretty bad. I think that there's only room for improvement. Now, obviously, I was kind of hoping it would be on-screen roles. Maybe that will come in time once they kind of get settled, especially Bischoff, who has been out of wrestling for God knows how many years. So I'm hoping that eventually they will move into on-screen roles, because I think both of them have a ton to offer in that respect, as we see with Heyman does in his role with Brock Lesnar. But as of right now, I'm just excited for them to get their hands on the product and try and turn it around.
And I think that right now, the majority of fans are probably like, wow, that, you know, that's a huge move. And it is. And so my concern was like that, listen, I don't want this to just be an optics move. I want this to be something of substance. I want something to come out of this and have real change. And my biggest point was that I'm cool with this. I trust both guys to run their shows. My concern was that Vince McMahon is still going to say, well, yeah, you guys can run your shows, but you're not really running the show because I end up having the final say. So while you have the best possible minds on the task here, ultimately it's still Vince's call, so it may be more of the same. So that was my biggest concern from this move.
Yeah, and, you know, in that press release, I think it said very distinctly that both of them will report to Vince McMahon. Mm-hmm. So as long as that's there, you kind of have your reservations, as we've heard through the Dean Ambrose podcast and CM Punk, that Vince basically has his hands on everything. And it's funny because as we were talking off air, we were watching my girlfriend and I were watching the Batista 24 special. And she was in shock because they show the backstage footage, and as soon as Batista came through the curtain at WrestleMania, Vince was sitting right there. So you know that Vince is still going to be around, he's still going to want to have a say in it, but you just hope that maybe two guys who command respect like Heyman and Bischoff and guys who have done so well outside of WWE will maybe have a bit more free reign as opposed to just random writers here and there over Vince.
I think that will be the case, and again, I don't want to repeat myself for everyone that's heard me talk about this, you know, a number of times now, but yes, they just need to, Vince McMahon needs to, if he still wants control, that's fine, but maybe take a step back from you know, the typical things that he would say are, you know, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Maybe somebody else's brain right now, and a brain that has been in wrestling for a combined, 30 or 40, 50 years, when you put those two minds together, or more, and you know, let them just run the show. I'm sure that both of those guys were probably pretty vocal with Vince, like, hey, I'll take this position that you're creating for me, but I want to have the control to just, or I want you to let me have the control to just trust me that I'm going to, you know, I'm going to turn the ship around, and that you're going to give me the ample time to do it, not just give us a week, 2 weeks, a month. This has to be like 6-12 months, even a, you know, a multi-year plan, because people think that they're going to instantly see everything turn around. Raw is going to look and feel completely different next week. That's not going to be the case. It's going to be minor changes, I think, and that's the smart way to do it. Minor changes week by week, see what works, see what doesn't. You don't just do something radically different and expect it to be successful. So those are just a couple of my thoughts.
Yeah, it's going to take a while, because if you do a drastic change, then like people are going to kind of call BS on it, like, oh, you guys are trying to fool us, and I think you're right. It has to kind of be like a methodical process. And like, you've seen certain tinkerings. Like, I know that we kind of beat this horse dead right now, but I really hope they just do away with the wild card thing. And from my understanding is that they are going to do that, because Bischoff and Heyman do want to kind of have their own separate entities. And I think that that's better. That's just a better product in general. But I think if they give each of them at least 6 to 8 months, I think that by the time we get to WrestleMania season around the Royal Rumble, we will start seeing actual really good changes.
That's a good time frame. Yeah, I think that that's where you kind of take the temperature and go, listen, you know, has your plan been working the way that you had expected? If not, do we need to change course again? I mean, so this is a very much touch and go situation. As much as Bischoff may have been credited for the NWO storyline, he's also had a past of coming up with some terrible storylines in WCW. I mean, it's not all butterflies and rainbows with Bischoff, and the same really goes for Heyman too. I think Heyman has a better chance of implementing change faster, since he's already engaged in the product on a weekly, daily basis probably at this point. Because he understands the system now, he understands the culture of WWE, he's intimately involved, whereas Bischoff has admittedly been removed for some time, and he needs to kind of acquaint himself to the current product, acquaint himself to what WWE is now, since when he was general manager back in, what was it, 2003 to 2004 and 5. So I think that it's been quite a change from when he was there 14 years ago. And so I think ultimately my point is that you'll probably see changes on Raw faster than you will see changes on SmackDown.
Yeah, which I'm okay with, because right now, excuse me, SmackDown's the better product. And whether that be for just the roster or just that the fact that the show is 2 hours, Raw is the one that needs better changing. And I think it has to do with the fact that Raw's 3 hours. You touch on it on almost every one of your shows. It's tough to sit through an entire Monday Night Raw, and because you're just filling all this time with repetitiveness, and I think as Kevin Owens touched on it on SmackDown, it's just Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre, Roman Reigns over and over and over again. So yeah, I do think that Raw is the one that you'll see change faster on, but I think that's the more needed product that has to be revamped, because SmackDown has, in my opinion, a bit more interesting characters at this time. And because it's a shorter program, it won't be as, it's not as, what's the word I'm looking for, as needed on SmackDown as it is on Raw right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, and furthermore, as much as WWE likes to brand both shows as that both shows are on equal footing, the reality is that Raw is still the flagship show. It just is. It just is. SmackDown, as much as they may have a superior product on air and they have better stories and it's more concise and it's shorter, all of those are true, Raw still feels like the flagship show. It just does, because it's Monday Night Raw. Maybe it's because Raw came before SmackDown ever did, and when it first debuted in 1999 is kind of an experiment. I just still think that, what you are right, though. Like, they need to work on Raw much more than they do on SmackDown. simply because it's a longer time. That extra hour is exponentially more difficult. I mean, Triple H has gone on record with the media of saying that, like, listen, you know, this is doing an extra hour is just torturous to try to come up with content that is engaging and always hits a home run. It's just not possible. And so as much as Paul Heyman is going to be involved in this, I think that we also need to realize that Paul Heyman is still dealing with a 3-hour product versus Bischoff's 2-hour product. So Paul Heyman's still going to have to navigate those waters.
Yeah, and I think it's just a problem all throughout WWE is the fact that there just is too much product. There's too much content to track. You know, I've heard you touch on it on a few of your shows where you say you just don't have the time to watch NXT, and I don't either. And all of my, like, wrestling buds who are real, like, marks and, like, watch NXT religiously, I tell them, like, look, I have no time. And how do I have time to watch Raw and SmackDown and NXT and NXT UK and 205 Live or Main Event? And it's just as basic as Raw moving to 3 hours all those years ago. It's just too much. And sometimes shorter is better. It just has to be short and sweet. It's not always about the volume. It's just about the actual content and the quality. And that's why I feel as soon as they went to 3 hours on Raw, that's when Raw started getting to become a drag to watch. My best years of watching Raw were 2 hours because it was just short to the point and you didn't have to watch No Way Jose versus Cesaro. And that's no slight on either of those competitors, but that's, you know, that's 15 minutes that I'm never going to get back. And, so I do think that SmackDown just has that slight edge over Raw just because of the hours.
And I remember, like, those two-hour shows, you were, in the majority of the time, left wanting more. I don't feel that way almost ever with a three-hour Raw. I mean, granted, I admittedly do watch the Hulu version of Raw, which is condensed into an hour and a half. And honestly, they do a great job of cutting out the stuff that doesn't matter. But the point is that, you know, the 3 hours, it doesn't leave many people going, oh, I can't wait to see what happens next week. It's just like, oh my God, we got through this. You know, oh, okay, good, it's over. I don't want to feel that way when I watch a wrestling show. WWE has this mentality, this ideology that, hey, more is better, more is better, more is better. And it just reaches a saturation point. It's like, oh, I can't absorb all of this. And I think that they have to be privy to that. WWE executives, I really do believe that they are not dumb people. And management are not stupid. They have to understand that. But they're probably just saying, well, they don't have to watch it if they don't want to. You know, they still can just watch Raw and SmackDown and catch up on the major things that are going on. They don't have to watch all these, you know, spinoffs of NXT and Evolve and all whatever else, you know. And so with that in mind, I think that this is mainly driven hey, we need advertisements, we need sponsors. It's all ad-driven revenue. That's the reason they're not going to ever get rid of the third hour, is because it's all about the money, baby. And I think that is why we will never see the third hour of Raw go. And at least that's my opinion in the short term.
Yeah, and the thing is that with that third hour of Raw, and it happened last week after that Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman thing that I liked in a nutshell when I saw it the first time, but not the second or third or fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh. Yeah. And I found that Raw last week and even kind of this week, you know, almost half an hour of it is like showing what happened and then talking about it and different angles and which hospital they're at. And it's just like, okay, get over yourselves. Like, seriously, like, I don't have to watch it. Like, that whole the night that it happened, I think the first 40 minutes was just dedicated to that. And 20 of that was the match, and the other 20 was just them re-showing it and the fireworks that went off forever. And don't get me wrong, I loved that segment. I thought it was really well done. It was different. But, like, it was like they were so proud of themselves that they were just showing it and saying, oh, look at what we did, oh, look at this spot and this and that, and it takes away from it. Like you said, it gets saturated, and that's just one inkling of Raw, how, like, they take one instance that was a really good spot and a really good segment, but they just beat it to death. And you realize that when you watch Raw start to finish, they just harp on a few things over and over and over again, And now with this wild card rule, it's even bleeding into SmackDown.
Yeah. When I was watching it, like you said, for the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth time, honestly, by like the third time, I'm like, okay, we get it. We watched. Everyone has social media. Everyone knows what happened. And I don't know if it's just a way to eat up time because of just how long the damn show is on Raw. Or it's just like you just said, they're thumping their chest going, ha, look how good this is. Look how much media attention and social media attention this got. We know it did. Look what we did. We're trying to, drive the point home. Well, like you said, they killed it. And I loved the segment. I thought it was one of the more innovative, just different ways to open Raw that they have done in over a year or more. I loved it. Regardless of how silly the fireworks were, all of that, and you can actually see if you look closely on the LED board, you could see the outline of actually where it was supposed to implode. Like, I'm fine with all of that. Like, it was well done. The camera angles were very good. I enjoyed the commentators like losing their minds, especially Corey Graves, who swore on air. Obviously was allowed to. All of that trying to make it feel authentic and real. Applause. Loved it all the way around. Now, beyond the fact that they just replayed it and replayed it and replayed it, and you have Bobby Lashley from a hospital telling Braun Strowman he's basically going to kill him the next time he sees him, you have Bobby Lashley coming out this last past Monday night. No signs of what just happened. No neck brace, no sling, no limping, even no taped up arm, nothing. Like, this is what I don't understand. When you go through something that is of that magnitude – and you have those special effects, you have to show it. I mean, and this is an Achilles heel that WWE has had for quite some time, not just with this particular spot, but when they're on a pay-per-view and you have somebody go through 16 tables and they take chair shots and, they throw themselves off ladders and then they come out on Raw the next night and then it's just like nothing happened. And it doesn't have to be every single time that, they get hit with a chair, but when something big like this happens, show it. Make me feel that this segment was authentic.
Yeah, and the other thing that kind of bothered me was, I believe Michael Cole said that it was the craziest thing to ever happen on Monday Night Raw. And in my head, I was just like, that's a joke, right? Because this stuff, used to happen, almost bi-weekly. I remember Linda McMahon getting tombstoned on the stage by Kane.
That's right.
Kane chokeslamming Bischoff through all those tables beside the stage, because if you remember back in the day, they had all the special effects set beside the stage, not behind. And Bischoff going through that, it all involves Kane weirdly, but Kane electrocuting Shane McMahon's testicles, Vince McMahon's limo getting blown up, all these things that used to happen on Monday Night Raw. And don't get me wrong, I know it's a different product and it's a different time and whatnot, so they can't do that all the time anymore, but come on, Michael Cole, don't insult the intelligence of the older viewers. That is by far not even close to the craziest thing that's happened on Monday Night Raw. Stephanie McMahon almost got forced to marry Undertaker on Monday Night Raw. That kind of was oh, come on, stop pumping your own chest, it was a good spot. I'm happy you guys did it. You thought outside the box, but for the older viewers like me and yourself, we know what used to go on.
And I know, I can appreciate too what Michael Cole was trying to do and obviously instructed to do and make it as big as it can be and you just hype it up as much as possible and let fans know just how big of a deal it was. But, Michael Cole, I actually rolled my eyes when he said that. I'm like, Michael, you cannot say that with a straight face. You have been with WWE for, 20, 25 years, and you're really going to tell us that? I mean, I think that the thinking from Vince McMahon telling him to say that is, wrestling fans don't remember anything beyond a week ago. I mean, wrestling, nobody remembers that. Well, really? I mean, you're going to tell me that Bobby Lashley going through the LED board is bigger than Stone Cold invading Raw with a beer truck or with a Zamboni or whatever it may be with his monster trucks or just some of the stuff Big Show collapsing the ring. I mean, you keep going. I mean, some of the things you said, Stephanie McMahon getting forced in that black wedding with the Undertaker only for Stone Cold to make the save. I mean, it's just for him to say that, it's just. Yeah, come on, Michael. I don't know. So some of that stuff, I understand what they're trying to do. I appreciate that they're trying to make it bigger than it is. That's their job. But something, when you go to the extreme like that and make a statement like that, yeah, it takes away from it.
Yeah, and, like, again, like, I liked it, and I think it showed promise for maybe the Heyman era. Like, I believe your co-host last week, Mary, mentioned how, like, lately on Raw, they open with a match, not a 25, 30-minute long segment. So I can appreciate the little changes that they're trying to make, but, like, don't harp on one thing. Like, better yourself. Like, don't, like, keep showing what Lashley and Strowman did and, you know, and show the replay 15 times and then show it on Raw and SmackDown for 2 weeks. Like, okay, build off it. Like, I'm really hoping that their last man standing match is good, because, like, I have this weird feeling that because they've hyped this up so much after that great spot and they've pumped their own tires so much on it, that they're going to build to this last man standing match. And you know as well as I do, last man standing matches aren't like they used to be. Like, we all know the infamous match with The Rock and Mankind at Rumble 99. Or another great one was Triple H versus Shawn Michaels at 04. That was great, and it actually ended in a draw. Like, that's what last man standing matches used to be. So, and once again, I understand it's a different time and different product, and they can't be like that anymore. But as an older fan, that's my, you know, bar for last man standing matches. So, again, I realize that they have to do it in the confines of a PG product, but they better not just show it as this everyday last man standing match as they have in years past. Like, they really got to hit home on this match to make people care about it and not just kind of roll their eyes.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
The whole key, as you said, I mean, it's follow-up. They need to follow up with this in a big way, and not in a flashy, got to do bigger stunts. Make me care about the competitors. Make me, I want to hear about, you know, what this means to them. I want to hear from Braun Strowman. I want to, you know, even from Bobby Lashley, who actually showed a little bit of promise in his promo work. I want to know what this means to them, and not just in a barbaric kind of like one-dimensional, who can throw somebody off a higher ledge and try to kill their opponent. I mean, I need to see violence in this match because it's a last man standing. Look what they just did. You have to just bring it to the next level, and I don't know if this is going to be the conclusion for their program. It may or may not be. It may conclude at SummerSlam, given that's the next pay-per-view. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about some of the years that have gone by, the decades that have gone by for last man standing matches, Shawn Michaels Triple H was one of the best ones, where Shawn, I think he hit him with a super kick and he couldn't make it to his feet for the count of 10, and ended up in a draw. And then subsequently, I think they did, it was a 2 out of 3 falls bar. It was bad blood or something in 2004 or so. And Triple H ended up winning the entire feud program, I believe. But that was one of my favorite of all time, was that. And yes, they have big shoes to fill, but I just don't want this to be one-dimensional. It needs to be something that actually has meaning and has character development. And we just haven't quite got there yet. And their follow-up this past Monday was, I wouldn't say it was awful, but I would say it took the steam out of the program, and it took the steam out of the momentum that entire program had. So one other thing I want to mention with you too, before we talk about Extreme Rules itself and get into some predictions, what do you think about Kevin Owens and his now full-fledged babyface turn? I don't think there's any question now that Kevin Owens is a babyface, adopting the Stunner full-fledged and now officially feuding with Shane McMahon.
I like it, and I didn't think I would, because when he first came back, and he did like that folks babyface run with the New Day. And I was actually there live in Montreal when he fully became an honorary member of the New Day and he tagged with them for the first time and everything. And I really wasn't behind it. Like, it just felt forced on his part and it just felt fake. And then obviously it turned out to be a work. But now I like it, because now it seems like he's in his element, because he kind of has the anti-hero thing going on. Like, he's not just pandering to the crowd like a regular babyface does, and I think Seth Rollins does that all the time now, and it's kind of hurt his character. But how he's been acting the past 2 weeks, like, it just feels like when he gives the promos, it's coming from, like, himself. Like, you can tell it's raw, and, like, he doesn't care what the crowd has to say. Like, there's sheer emotion on his face, and I think if they could, again, capitalize on this and, like, actually not screw this up by trying to get their hands and everything and just let it happen organically, they could have something really great on their hands. Because especially now that, for the most part, Kevin Owens hasn't been utilized in the wild card rule a lot. He's been mostly just a mainstay on SmackDown, which I prefer him in. I think they could really skyrocket him to the top. He's been over as a heel pretty much since he got here in 2015 with that feud with Cena. So, like, yeah, I really like what they're doing. I like that it's kind of an edgier babyface because, as I mentioned, the forced babyface thing didn't really work for him. But, yeah, and obviously he's going against Shane, which is the biggest heel right now. So, yeah, I'm really loving that, and I'm anxious to see where it goes.
Yeah, I am too, and I think that right now Kevin Owens has – I've been dying for a babyface run for him. Yes, he's great as a heel. I enjoy his heel character. I think it's been played out, and I think it's also time to see what he's got as a babyface. Plus, you have AJ Styles who just turned heel, and you need to balance the equation with a big babyface turn. And like you said, the whole deal with the New Day, I thought that that was something that we all knew was going to end quickly, or at least in the near future. I don't think anyone believed that he was going to stay a babyface with the New Day doing all those silly things with eating, you know, 400 pancakes and doing gyrations and while Big E was injured or whatever. So we all knew it was going to happen, but this one feels authentic. This one feels like he's got a little bit of CM Punk in him, a little bit of that kind of like rebellious feeling where, and I alluded to this last night on my show, was that, you know, they did the same thing with CM Punk where they took his mic and basically shut it off. And then he came out the next week and had a megaphone, I believe it was. So maybe they're getting a little bit of that with Kevin Owens, and he's adopted the Stone Cold Stunner. Or wait, no, it's just the Stunner because he's not Stone Cold. So it's just the Stunner. And I'm fine with that too. I don't feel that he's, any kind of gimmick infringement on Stone Cold. And Stone Cold commented on Twitter that, you know, hey, like, you know, good for you, kid. You know, he's fine with him adopting the Stunner, and he does it pretty well. It's certainly better than the Springboard Stunner that John Cena has done in years past. And I like seeing Shane get stunned because Shane sells it in some of the best possible way that you can. I mean, it's not as good as The Rock, but man, when Shane gets stunned, it's like he has springs in his knees. It's great. And plus Shane McMahon is a heel I like, and I like seeing him get his ass kicked. Like, that is what I want to feel, and I have felt that for Shane, even though he has sucked up a lot of time from stars that probably should have been getting that airtime, and which obviously he hasn't, and that's something that Kevin Owens has relayed to Shane. And it's nice that Kevin Owens is kind of being the voice of the fans, where people – WWE knows that the fans have been complaining that, look, Shane McMahon has been sucking up the time from the stars that should be getting this time. Shane McMahon's not a true performer. He's 50 years old. He's the son of the promoter. He feels privileged. Who is benefiting from this? And so Kevin Owens right now feels like the voice of the fans. He hits a stunner and leaves. That's something Stone Cold would do. So I like it right now. I want him to find his own identity. I don't want him to be Stone Cold Part 2. I want him to be Kevin Owens. That's what I want. But certainly taking the stunner will not hurt his crowd reaction. And I fully expect him to make an appearance in some form or fashion. And we'll get to that this Sunday.
Yeah, and one thing that I really like about it is because we've seen this anti-authority, like, figure babyface rise to, like, the occasion before, but it's always been like, okay, John Cena's going to do it. Like, when he had the 5-on-5 Survivor Series match against the Authority, then we got Roman Reigns, and it's always usually just, like, the hand-picked, you know, big star of WWE, but they actually took a guy who, A, was a heel, B, wasn't in the main card for about 2 years now, and C, the crowd actually really liked. Yes, he's been a heel, but he's always been an over heel. He's always had that good heat. So the crowd is behind Kevin Owens, and they're taking a guy who has been sorely underutilized, sorry about that, And it just, the whole dynamic of the storyline is working, because there, it's not like I just mentioned, if it was Roman Reigns doing it, it'd be like, okay, yeah, well, you're saying all this, but they're just using you again, so we're still upset. But no, they're using a guy who the fans have been clamoring to use more, and they want to see more of. And this kind of like babyface turn, but not really, but he is, just because of what he's saying, not by the way he's acting. The whole dynamic of it is really working well, and I think it's just perfectly placed in time.
It is, and the key to the success of the long-term success of the babyface run for Owens is to not really change who he is. I don't want him coming out next week on SmackDown and, you know, starting pandering to the fans that he's been trashing for the last 3 years that he's been on the roster, like, or 4 years or whatever it's been. I want him to come out and just be who he is. I don't want him changing anything about himself, other than just maybe removing the attacks he does on fans. I mean, I don't want him attacking the live audience. You can't do that as a babyface. But don't turn around and do a complete 180 and start praising the audience and trying to say, we this, we that, when you have for years and years been saying that, you know, basically it's me against you. So I think that if he just speaks the truth, is kind of an anti-hero, and WWE doesn't put their PG, you know, little childish spin on what their baby faces should be about, you know, soft, everything's so soft with their baby face. Even Seth Rollins is, everything is we, oh, this is what we want. Like, okay, like, I don't need you to tell me that it's a we thing. Like, I will know that it's a we thing when you say things that I agree with, and you, I am living vicariously through you. I don't need you to tell me that it's your dream to be here. I know that. I mean, if you're in the WWE, you worked your ass off to get there. You didn't just happen to land there. Like, I know these things. I don't need to have you be my childhood hero or the hero for my kids. Like, I can decide that for myself. I mean, like, so there's things that WWE just likes to do when they find a babyface and make them super corporately child-friendly, and I do not want that for Kevin Owens. They will destroy Kevin Owens if they take that approach with him.
Yeah, and I like what you brought up about the we thing, because if you remember the big babyface back in the day, like Steve Austin, like, he never really addressed the crowd. He would just talk to his opponent as if no one else was there, and that's what got him over. Yeah, The Rock had the millions and millions stuff and was great at interacting, getting the crowd engaged, but not so much when he came back. But in his original run, he really just spoke one-on-one with his opponent, with the heels, whether it had been Triple H or Kurt Angle or what have you. And that's what got the crowd to like them. They liked them because of the character itself, not just because of what the character was saying. It's easy for anyone to come out and be like, you know, like, the crowd deserves better than this, and they're like, without them, we're nothing. And I just feel like so much of WWE has become about the WWE universe and interacting with the universe, and the universe is like, give me a break. Like, just make it about the stars. It doesn't always have to be about the bigger picture. Just tell, like, Kevin Owens coming out and having direct beef with his boss, Shane McMahon, abusing his power. That's what I care about. I don't care about what the people in, I don't know where they were this week, but let's just say Sacramento paid for their tickets. Like, I just want them to be in the arena and give a bit of an ambiance. That's it. I'm not watching it for the crowd. I'm watching it for the wrestlers. And that's what I liked about the Kevin Owens shoot promo, is that he was literally just saying what was good for the wrestlers, not about what's good for the crowd, just about what wrestlers were being underutilized or buried. And that's what I liked about it. Again, I know that you have to involve the crowd and you should be appreciative and everything, but my God, it's about the content, you know? Just give it a break with this WWE universe. It's kind of getting on my nerves.
It's, the problem is that it's any babyface that WWE has produced in the last, oh my God, 5 years or maybe even longer, it's a corporate baby face where they try to make them so accessible to the fans and soften them to the point of nauseating. And I, you know, I understand it's PG. We can't have the cussing. We can't have the middle fingers unless you're Kofi Kingston last week. You can't be doing these things that the Attitude Era and TV 14 allowed you. I understand that. But at the same time, I don't need you to come out and put the brand over. I don't need you to come out and basically admit that the brand is bigger than you, which is what they do every time that they say, it's my dream to be here. Oh my God. I want to be a hero for all the kids. I mean, how many times have we heard that? It's sickening. I'm tired of WWE creative and really management putting the brand over the wrestlers, because that's a backwards way to excel the brand. The way you excel the brand is by putting over the stars and making them priority, which will in turn make the brand bigger because they are under your brand. But when you explicitly and transparently make the brand in the promos every single time you hear it, the focal point of what is important for the wrestler, then it just inherently devalues them and it devalues the brand, because it's obvious that the WWE cares more about the brand than they do the stars.
Yeah, and like, just one of the wrestlers that was kind of always like a victim of that is Randy Orton. Like, Randy Orton would get over as like this vicious heel, and when he would turn babyface, not to say that he would still go around kicking people in the heads and kissing an unconscious Stephanie McMahon. Obviously, you can't do that as a babyface, but like, you know, like when he would turn around and like he kind of eggs the crowd on and like then he gets ready for the RKO, like, does he have to do that? Like, Randy Orton's one of those characters that I found that, or superstars, I would say, that when he was playing the babyface character, like, you just felt how forced it was and it would seep through him because he wasn't being himself. He was himself as a heel, and you saw it, like, that's what came naturally to him. And maybe if they had just let him be that, but, you know, not as edgy, more of a babyface rendition, it would have worked. Like, even Triple H was kind of like that when he was a babyface. But I don't know, I think you're right. It's just this constant notion of that it has to be about the WWE and the WWE universe instead of the superstars themselves. And it feels that ever since John Cena happened, they don't want any superstar to become as big as him.
No, because then they don't have the control that you would have if you kind of, you know, put a little cold water. They're getting a little too hot. It looks, you know, we don't want that. We want to make sure that they're under our thumb. And you're right. I think John Cena may be the last massive star to come out of WWE, at least as far as the eye can see. I don't see it changing. You know, that comes out of WWE and has the control and the flexibility to make his own schedule, come back when he wants. I mean, The Rock obviously is Exhibit A as well, and just kind of make his own schedule. I want to come back. I want to make a movie. Okay, I'll come back. I mean, John Cena has that flexibility, and that means that WWE does not have any power or control over him, and they don't like that. And so maybe that's the thinking, but you're right. This whole label of WWE Universe, I didn't like from the day that they implemented it. And I remember them years ago. I don't even remember the year of when they implemented that stupid label that they put on fans. But they came out with a survey of asking what you would label the WWE fans as. And I don't remember the other choices, but WWE Universe was one of them. So I don't know if that survey in and of itself was the determining factor or whatever, but I just don't like it. They've even taken a corporate approach to the fans. Like, I don't like to be known as part of the WWE Universe. It sounds so corporate. It sounds like so controlled. Like I'm a WWE fan. I'm not, you know, like, I don't know what you mean by WWE Universe. Like, I'm a WWE fan. I don't know why Vince McMahon suddenly just said, they're not fans. Fans is an antiquated word. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why they just couldn't say that. I don't understand. But the WWE Universe label, I just still don't like it. And it's been how many years now?
Yeah, it's been forever. And that was just kind of, I remember the first time we were on together and I said that I kind of fell out of like the loop for a bit. And so when they started with kind of like these hokey things and like, can it just be the fan base? You know, even like when the superstars go out and they fight in the crowd, like Michael Cole always says, oh, they're out in the WWE universe.
Yeah.
No, they're just out in the seating area. Like, what do you mean? It's all this different. They didn't go through a vortex. You know, it's just so childish, you know, like, and I get it. It's PG and I keep having to remind myself that, but it's like, you don't have to drive it home so much. And to the point that when they split the brands again in 2016, they had to name the Raw World Championship the Universal Championship. Like, come on, like, we understand, we get it, but It's like you said, it's just they have to shove it down your throat and let you know that this is our corporate view of who the fans are.
This is starting to boil my blood. It's one of my topics that I just could rant on for an hour, but I'm going to try to turn the page here. So as far as extreme, well, actually, let me ask you this, because I'm sure there's a story or two that I might be missing. Before we get to extreme rules, was there anything else that, you know, you wanted to get your take on?
I think that the one thing, a positive thing, because as you always say, we got to balance the negative with the positive. I really liked what they've done with the SmackDown Tag Team Division, because before WrestleMania, I thought that the SmackDown Tag Team Division was great when they had the Bar there and the Usos were still there. And I believe Gallows and Anderson were on SmackDown as well. And then as soon as WrestleMania came and went, it just became a waste baron. Like, the Hardy Boys got hurt and had to vacate the titles. But they've recently really rejuvenated it, and I think the Planet's champions have been excellent. The New Day has been, you know, entertaining as always. You can never really go wrong with them. They'll always put on a fairly entertaining show. And I've really liked Heavy Machinery. Obviously, they're over with the crowd. They're decent in the ring. Obviously, they're still a big green, and I don't think they're quite ready for a championship run. But I find what they've done on SmackDown with the tag team belts and making them relevant. And I like how Daniel Bryan even referenced how irrelevant the division was before they took over the championship. So kudos to WWE on making me care about that division and those two titles.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of echoed that as well for weeks and weeks and weeks about the what WWE has done with the tag team belts and really Daniel Bryan and Rowan, who have made the tag team belts relevant. Like, I feel like they're important because they're around the waist of two guys that feel legitimate, and Rowan, who has been reinvented and a perfect fit with Daniel Bryan, is the most relevant he's ever been in his entire career. And I'm talking about Wyatt Family, who was the third forgotten wheel. When he was part of Harper and Rowan, he was still number two to Harper. So he's in a good place. Daniel's in a good place. I would like to see them get a little more TV time. It's kind of waned as of late. I need just to have them restate their mission. I don't just go, you know, run down the fans, something. I just need a little bit more from them on a week-to-week basis and give them a little bit more airtime and mic time. But other than that, you're right. I mean, the tag team division is on the rise on SmackDown Live for sure. The Heavy Machinery, Otis is clearly the star of that duo, and that's fine. Otis is a guy that you just can't not watch. I mean, he's kind of quirky, but he's a big dude, so he's believable. And he has the caterpillar, aka the worm. He has all of, you know, he's got weird gyrations, but he's also an ass kicking machine. So he's not just out there as a comedy act. They're a legitimate tag team duo. Do I think they're ready for a tag team championship? No, I don't. I mean, so early spoiler alert, I don't. But we've seen New Day with the belts too. But they don't need them. I really don't think that New Day needs the belts at this point. Like, they are bigger than the tag team championship belts. I mean, it sounds bad, but it's kind of true. Like, they don't need them. But yeah, I'll second that. You know, I didn't really think about that, but I think that is true.
Yeah, and just kind of build off of that with titles, because I'm a big guy on that. You have to make titles relevant. And I've said the last time I was on the show, I hate what they've done with, like, the Intercontinental Championship on Balor, where they just put the title on him and said, okay, well, he's a champion now, so you can't get mad at us for not utilizing him. But contrary to that, I think that what they've done with Ricochet and the U.S. title has been amazing. You know, it's been on the main event of Raw for a couple weeks, and then the heel turn from AJ, which I love. I love a heel AJ. I like that he's back with the Good Brothers, Gallows and Anderson, because they've been underutilized since they dropped the Raw tag team titles at WrestleMania 33. So I'm glad that they're back together. I like a heel AJ. I like his dynamic with Ricochet. Obviously, their matches together, the in-ring work is phenomenal, no pun intended. But I think that they're going to have a good program. I like that the U.S. title is being held as relevant, because for a while, even though Joe had it and Mysterio had it, it didn't feel that way. And now I'm actually starting to care about it. Obviously, when you put a guy like AJ Styles in the mix, it automatically boosts the reputation of the storyline. But yeah, I think that they've done a good job making that title relevant. And the two guys that they have in the program with one another have really clicked well.
The United States Championship has not been this high in terms of relevancy in quite a while, and that's crazy to think about because of how short of a period of time that Ricochet has been on the roster. Typically, you'd have a veteran who would come along and make the United States Championship relevant. I mean, John Cena did it with his open challenge, and I looked forward to that every single week. I mean, it was innovative. It gave guys a chance to get the rub off John Cena and maybe knock him off his perch. I mean, it was a hell of a way to do it, and the credibility of John Cena certainly helped. And Ricochet's doing that, and maybe not to that degree, but he's certainly elevating the belt and making it feel important. Because he is, number one, a crazy athlete in the ring. I mean, this guy does things that, like, if I spent my life dedicating to try to do just one of the maneuvers, I'd probably either be dead, paralyzed, or I would just say the hell with it. I mean, he does things that are just mind-blowing in the ring, and so that gets him over with fans. On top of that, he's not just this guy that's flashy in the ring, but he, in promos... Well, I don't think he's cut an A-plus, like, jaw-dropping promo yet. I think he has done a good job of just being believable. He's relaxed. He doesn't feel like he's necessarily reading his lines, even though I'm sure he is. He's presenting it like he's not. That's important. And he just feels authentic. I don't feel like he's playing somebody. He just kind of feels like this dude that's super athletic, chill guy, but at the same time is also formidable in the ring and can beat you in a multiple different ways. So that's what I think Ricochet brings to the table. And that's why I think people are connecting with him, because he's so much different than the other performers. And he's making that championship feel super relevant for a very short period of time that he's been on the main roster.
Yeah, and I really hope that they take this, you know, what they've done with the U.S. title and apply it to the Intercontinental Championship. Because that title, since the Superstar Shakeup and it went to SmackDown with Balor, you know, it feels all those years that The Miz literally dedicated his life to making it relevant again have gone out the door. And yes, he had that match with Shinsuke Nakamura on SmackDown, and even that bothered me because I was saying to myself how they build it, like, first time ever. And I'm just like, yeah, first time ever, Balor's the Intercontinental Championship, and you're wasting it on a SmackDown with zero advertisement? Like, obviously, they're going to build towards a program and a title matches, and I'm sure that it's going to spill over to two or three pay-per-views. But, man, like, you couldn't have built it a bit better? Like, I don't understand why... It was just built as the week prior Shinsuke bumped into him backstage. And I just hope that they're at least going somewhere with it, even though I don't like the way it was started and the way, you know, how the match took place. I hope that they utilize what they've had on Raw with AJ and Ricochet over the US title, and they apply it to Nakamura and Balor on SmackDown with the IC title. Because again, Balor and Nakamura, they could have some great A-plus level matches, but actually utilize them, put some time into it, like they did with Ricochet and AJ Styles. And again, you know, the IC title is one of the most prestigious in WWE, so I just hope that they continue this trend and now they try and build up the Intercontinental Championship.
It certainly needs some love. The Intercontinental Championship has just... It's almost been forgotten, like you said. I mean, and you could argue Finn Balor is a bigger star than Ricochet. I don't think that would even be an argument. He just is. And yet the belt on the bigger star doesn't feel as important as the belt on the younger talent, which it should be the opposite. And yeah, Finn Balor has really just kind of fallen off a cliff. And to be honest, so has Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, since he lost the main event of WrestleMania and went low blow happy, and then he went into no speak of English, and then he just went away with Rusev and he's gone. And now he is in a program with Finn Balor. And I've mentioned this a couple times in my show, but when you think about how highly anticipated this match would have been a couple of years ago, before Shinsuke fell off a cliff, and when Finn Balor was super hot and relevant, how much fans would have been just going crazy for this match. And now it's just kind of featured on SmackDown, Not a lot of fanfare. You know, it's going to be a good match, but, you know, neither character is really hot right now. They're both honestly ice cold, and one of them is the Intercontinental Champion, and a championship that has one of the longest and most prestigious lineages of all the championships in wrestling ever. So there's that, and it's just, it's kind of sad to think that this match, as if you just put it back into 2017, would have been like, oh my God, I can't wait. Who do you think is going to win? To, okay, well, they're now wrestling, and we'll see who wins. I mean, it's crazy to think the fall from grace for these two and the championship.
Yeah, and like, it's just so easy to forget about these guys because they just throw them on SmackDown. And as we said, SmackDown's shorter. And with this wild card rule where it's just Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns 45% of the time, they just got thrown away to the side. And, like, again, I like the duo of Nakamura and Balor. And I like that the Intercontinental Championship is in the mix. And, like, the sky's the limit in terms of potential for this feud. But you got to do something better than no advertisement for the match. It's the first match on SmackDown. Why are they fighting? You know, just anything. You could have had, you know, a fatal four-way match with more than enough talent on SmackDown for the Intercontinental Championship and make Nakamura win. Just, like, something more of substance, you know? I just, especially for, like, the quality of the performers and the lineage of the championship. It can't just be, like, no track record of why Nakamura and Balor are fighting. And, again, they have time to save it because of the superstars and how talented they are. But, like you said, if this was 2 years ago, people would have been raving over this match. And now, because of what they've done with them, or lack thereof, since, I don't know, the superstar shakeup, or even longer for Nakamura, it just feels like a waste. And I just hate it when they use titles and superstars on these programs that are just so poor. And it just makes me realize, like, you could have the best in-ring match you want with the big names and a good belt, but if the story's not there, like, how am I supposed to get invested into it?
You don't. That's the answer. You don't. And I don't know. Like, I think that they could bring fans' interest back if their quality of their title match is super high and they're given enough time to tell a good story. I think that you could generate more interest and more momentum for this program and for both performers who have, as I said, gone into the abyss over the last number of months. And so there is an opportunity here. I don't think all hope is lost. They just need the time to repair themselves. They need time to repair the championship. And I think it can be done over time. And if they just put some fire into this rivalry, as you said, explain some things. Don't just have it happen. And WWE's rule of all you have to do is attack the champion and you get a championship match, which is true. Which is how many I mean, it's just ridiculous that you could be backstage. I could just be walking in on the job the first day up on the main roster and attack the Universal Champion or WWE Champion. And if a camera is on me and they see me do it, guess what I'm going to get on that pay-per-view? I'm going to get a championship match. I mean, that's just the way that their logic works, which is completely backwards from how you should actually earn a championship in a simulated sports environment. But nonetheless, all right. So I want to jump to Extreme Rules predictions here. And typically, I start at the top of the card. I'm going to start at the bottom of the card with the Cruiserweight Championship and Drew Gulak versus Tony Nese. What do you think is going to be the outcome of this match? Does Drew Gulak retain, or could Tony Nese grab the belt?
Well, I was caught off guard at Stomping Grounds when they put the belt on Gulak, because Nese had just beaten Buddy Murphy for it at WrestleMania. So I don't think that they're going to pour cold water on Gulak's title reign, especially after such, in my opinion, was a shocking victory. So I think it's going to be a good match, but at this point in time, I just think that Gulak is going to keep the title for at least until SummerSlam.
Yeah, I'm with you. Honestly, I mean, I don't think anybody is super invested in this match. It's unfortunately just the way it is because of the way they've been positioned and presented on TV. So I'm going to go with Drew Gulak retains just because he just won the championship. I actually didn't think he would. I thought Tony Nese was going to be champion for life. And Drew Gulak surprised everybody at the pay-per-view last month, I think it was. And they just decided to switch championship because, well, it was just Tony's had it long enough. So I'm going to go with Drew Gulak because I don't want to see them play hot potato. I mean, that's just my only logic. Antonio Cesaro. Geez, they took Antonio a long time away. Aleister Black versus Cesaro. Now, I know you'll give me your prediction, but what do you think about Cesaro being the one to knock at Aleister Black's door?
Did someone tell him that he's not in the bar anymore? Like, I don't understand. Like, he comes out to the ring doing the bar sign, and I know I'm talking about solely about Cesaro, but I will get to his program with Aleister Black. But Cesaro's just like, who the hell are you, man? Like, they just put in, like, a work in progress. Well, it felt like a work in progress to get his entrance as it is now, as it started with the new entrance video, and then the new music, and then the new lights, and now he just shows up on the stage standing there. But, like, it's, I just don't know what to make of the guy. You know, he comes out doing the bar sign, he comes out with the bar on his mouth guard, and I just don't know who he is. I don't know what he's all about, and it's been that way since he debuted. You know, I found it funny that you said Antonio Cesaro, because when he first showed up, I don't know if you remember, Matt, but, like, he would just come to the ring and speak in a bunch of different languages. Mm-hmm. And then he aligned with Zeb Coulter and became a real American. And then he became James Bond. And then he was the bar. And now he's just a guy who's constantly posing. I don't know. Like, what do you think of Cesaro? Like, I'm curious to see what your opinion on what, like, just forget Aleister Black for the moment, but Cesaro himself.
I think Cesaro is, first of all, what I will say in his praise is that he is one of the best wrestlers that WWE has.
Yes.
I remember the match that he had with John Cena on Raw a number of years ago that was like, oh my God, this could be the match that propels him to the main event level. And it didn't. And this guy can go with anybody. You can't see through his work. And what I mean, like, I can't. When I'm seeing him hit somebody, I don't think that he's pulling punches. Like, his uppercuts are very good. He's a stiff worker. I like that. In the ring, he's super strong, freakishly strong, I think deceivingly strong. So he's got all the physical qualifications. He's a good-looking dude. He should be in his prime given his age. He's got everything working for him except his identity. I mean, you kind of hit it on the head. I mean, and Vince McMahon, I'll never forget this. When he was on Stone Cold's podcast, Stone Cold questioned Vince and said, you know, what's Cesaro missing? And Vince says, well, I don't know, maybe it's because he's Swiss. What the hell does that have to do with anything with Cesaro not being successful because he's Swiss? I mean, that was the most ridiculous answer that I've heard of why Cesaro has not reached the level that we all believe he can and the potential that he has. So it's just, I don't think Cesaro knows who he is, or at least how to portray who he actually is in real life, turned up to 10, in a character form in WWE. I think that it's just a case of not knowing how to portray himself in a way that's marketable and can get him over to that next level. It's just a case of really identity not being there for him.
Yeah, so identity aside, he's great in the ring, and I think his work with Aleister Black will be fantastic. I wasn't expecting it to be Cesaro. And I did kind of laugh that when he sat down in the chair, he had his mouth guard in. Because anyway, again, I'm trying to stop focusing solely on Cesaro, because I am really excited to see Aleister Black finally get in the ring with this new character. I love his promos, how he's been overpronouncing words, and like it's been kind of just like dead silence in his promos. I have a small kind of thought that maybe it won't end up being Cesaro, because it felt almost too out of left field, if you know what I mean. Like, he was probably the very last person I would have expected to knock on Aleister Black's door. So there's a part of me that kind of thinks that maybe it's a Bray Wyatt who attacks him on the way to the ring, but I don't know. There's something kind of that I'm thinking, like, is it actually Cesaro?
I never thought of that. It very well could be Bray Wyatt attacking him on the way to the ring, or you see Cesaro just mysteriously down and we don't know who attacked him, and then you have Aleister Black in the middle of the ring going, well, I guess we're going to have a forfeit, and then Bray Wyatt comes out and you know, destroys Aleister Black. My only issue with that would be that Aleister Black, with this newfound character, redefined character, and like you said, I've really enjoyed his promos that he has done because they've been so intense yet quiet, and that quiet intensity always is the best. Samoa Joe is really good at that as well. And when he has that and he's overpronouncing words and it's very unique, you can't have him lose his first match that has that new character to it. I think they need to get a little win streak behind him if this new character is going to stick and make people take him seriously. So I don't think that'll happen. I think Cesaro is going to be a sacrificial lamb for Aleister Black, and we'll have Cesaro coming out. Maybe he'll just mesh all of his previous gimmicks together, and he'll, you know, cut a promo in Russian but have the bar mouthpiece, and, you know, wearing James Bond sunglasses. I mean, maybe he'll do all three. Maybe it's just a hybrid of all of them, because at this point I don't know who he is either. He's just kind of generic wrestler A. But I do think it will end up being Cesaro, and I do think that he will just end up being a sacrificial lamb for Aleister Black.
Yeah, you're probably right. And in that case, I think Aleister Black will come away with the win. And I think that it's going to be a really good match. I love Cesaro's work in the ring. As you said, his strength is almost second to none. Obviously, Aleister Black is great in the ring too. They both have very unique styles, so I'm interested to see how those clash with one another. But yeah, I think Black comes out on top if, and I'm still holding out hope, if Cesaro is in fact the guy to come to the ring.
Okay, so far I believe we are in agreement for the first two. Let's see if that continues with the SmackDown Tag Team Championship of the Planets Champions, Daniel Bryan and Rowan, versus the New Day versus Heavy Machinery. I'll let you pick first on this one.
I'm going to go with the Planets Champions. I think that we kind of touched on it earlier. They've done a really good job of making those belts relevant, and I think that Daniel Bryan is the guy to bring those belts to new heights, along with Rowan, who's been great in his own regard as well. I don't think it's time for the New Day to have the belts, because as you said, they don't need the belts. They're kind of bigger than that. And you don't want to completely separate them from Kofi. Every time the New Day has held the belts, it's kind of been the three of them. So I find that this would be kind of not a stain, but almost like an asterisk if Kofi were not to be involved in any capacity in the title win. Heavy Machinery I love, but they're just not ready. So I think it's going to be a great match, but I think the Planets Champions are going to come out with the victory here.
We're going three for three here, because I'm going with you on that one. I just don't see any logic for Daniel Bryan and Rowan dropping the belts here. I don't need a shock win for the newcomers of Heavy Machinery to win the belts. I think that would cause a little bit of resentment from the fans, who I think have more respect for Daniel Bryan than they do Heavy Machinery, even if Daniel Bryan's being positioned as a heel. You need to have the anticipation for Heavy Machinery build and build and build, and want to see fans clamor and scratch and claw and yell for them to be tag team champions. And I'm just not feeling that yet. I think fans are still trying to find their footing with them as characters, and seeing if, you know, they relate and all of that. There's kind of a little bit of a grace period here and a warming up period, and they're not through that yet. They need months and months, I believe. Maybe not until 2019 would Heavy Machinery grab the tag team championships. I don't even care if you wait till WrestleMania, if done right. I don't need them to be champions just because it'll get people talking. Well, that's not the right way to get people talking. Plus, Daniel Bryan and Rowan are adding a lot of value every single week to those belts. They just do such a good job. Daniel Bryan clearly takes most of the credit here, but Rowan, you can't shove Rowan aside here. He's been the most relevant he's been. He is a good big man, and they've redefined him to be a monster and not just this big dude that gets pinned in one move by The Rock at WrestleMania. He has gotten his monster status back, And so, yeah, I just don't see anybody taking the belts from them, at least for the next couple of months. And the New Day, as I said, I mean, my only argument is like, it's like, okay, New Day is tag team champions. Okay, well, then they come out and they can just change their number to 6 when they say how many times they've won the championship. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It's the Planet's champions all the way.
Yeah, and I think it's the right move. And you've said it before, and I'll reiterate it. Like, even if it's the predictable win, it doesn't mean that it's wrong. If it's the right thing to do, I don't care if it's predictable. And I think that it would be counterproductive for Heavy Machinery to come away with the belts here. And I just don't see in any realm of possibility that the New Day would win. I think the New Day are kind of in this match to kind of add some star power to it and some flexibility in terms of how the match could go in the ring. But yeah, I fully expect Daniel Bryan and Rowan to come away still as the champions.
You know, there are so many guys that just have that had the first name chopped. I mean, look at Andrade. He's lost part of his name.
Ollie.
Yeah, and wasn't Rusev? Didn't he have another
Alexander Rusev?
That's right. Yeah. So I mean, just I don't know what it is with the names being chopped. But okay, in a less predictable match, at least in my eyes, for the Raw Tag Team Championships, we have the Revival versus the Usos. I'll go first on this one. This is not so easy. I would not bet money on this match in either pick that you make. I will say that the Usos win the tag team titles here because I think there's going to be a lot of people retaining championships on this pay-per-view. The Revival haven't done a whole lot since they won the belts, and I understand that they just won the belts, but the Usos, by the same token, haven't got a lot going for them lately. I know they've been in terrible comedy skits as of late in the past couple of weeks and months. It would, I think, get fans a little more excited for the Raw Tag Team Championships, and like I said, the Revival are kind of ice cold at this point, even though they're the champions. So I'm going to go with the safe hands of the Usos to win the Raw Tag Team Championship.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Usos as well. The Raw Tag Team Championships, it's been a while since they felt relevant. You know, in the winter, there was a this past winter, I'll add, when Bobby Roode and Chad Gable had them. They were somewhat relevant. They had some good matches with the Revival. But as soon as the Revival dropped the belt to Ryder and Hawkins at WrestleMania, they've just felt dead. And there's no hype around them. And even with the Revival holding the belts for the last month or so, there still has been zero hype surrounding the belts. And I think the Usos have not done anything since coming to Raw. And they never held those Raw tag team titles. So I think it would be something different for them. And I think the Usos are the perfect guys to bring the belts back to relevancy. So, yeah, I think the Usos will come away with the win.
Yeah, you know, so I think that they just have to. Like you said, the Raw Tag Team Championships are just, like, they just kind of feel like props. They don't feel like they mean anything. And I think the Usos are the perfect team to bring value back to those belts. Here's an interesting match. This one I'm very interested in to see how this plays out. More interested than I thought I would be. The SmackDown Women's Championship, the 2-on-1 handicap match with Bayley facing Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. And the winner of this match, if Nikki and or Alexa win, Alexa becomes champion. So even though Nikki is in the match, she can only win the belt for Alexa. And Nikki Cross, just on kind of a side note, I've mentioned this in my shows this week. I'm really enjoying Nikki Cross more than I thought I would after they really softened her character and she was just kind of backstage from going from this psychopath with insanity to backstage with this little giddy schoolgirl going, oh, hey, what's going on, Alexa? What's up? Like, I mean, I was just like very just jarred by that transition, sudden transition of her character. They put her with Alexa, and I'm like, oh no, she's going to get lost in the shuffle. Clearly, Alexa's just using her. And Bayley comes along and makes it, hey, makes it known, like, you are being used by Alexa. Look at her track record with Nia Jax, with Mickie James. Look what she's done. And Nikki refusing to believe that Alexa would do that, is standing by the side of Alexa like a good friend would. And so it's, I'm finding it just very difficult to hate Nikki Cross because I like her promos. Yes, she has a thick accent, but to me that almost adds to why I pay attention to her, because I want to hear what she actually is saying. And her promos are good. They seem believable. And it's hard to hate her because she's standing up for a friend that she believes somebody is her – that she believes is her friend, regardless of whether she ultimately is or not. So this whole storyline is interesting. Of course, the looming rumor of Sasha Banks returning to make the save or turn on Bayley. So before I give my who I think's going to win, what's your thoughts on this whole storyline?
So the storyline, when it first started happening, I was not interested, but Nikki Cross has grabbed my attention on it. And I find it just a testament to how good she's been that Alexa Bliss doesn't even have to be on the television to drive this storyline. You know, the whole story is Alexa trying to get the belt, but she's almost never there. So Nikki Cross has been really cool, and I like the fact that she's not full-blown insane anymore, because I find when WWE pushes a character as just completely insane, it kind of runs its course and it dies out. I think of a guy maybe like Umaga, that not that he was insane, but he was just kind of a wild barbarian. And after the initial, you know, like, he wears off and he just continues being a babbling oaf, like, what is there else to do with him? And I feel like if they would have gone the road with Nikki Cross, how she was in NXT, where she was just completely psycho, eventually people would have just been like, okay, well, that's old. Then you can't uncrazy someone. So I like the fact that they kind of added a new dimension to her character as the giddy schoolgirl. She does have a bit of sanity, no pun intended, to herself. But yeah, she's really drove this storyline. I feel like Bayley has just kind of been going with the flow. She had that really good promo with Alexa a couple weeks ago, but since then it seems like she's just kind of like, oh, okay, I'm here, and it's all about Nikki driving in, and she's just kind of building off of what Nikki says. But yeah, just based off of Nikki Cross and what she's done, it has grasped my attention. But just a quick question. Did you say that no matter who gets the pin on Bayley, Alexa will be the champion?
Yes.
Oh, I did not know that. I thought so that will kind of change my prediction.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The stipulation was that they would become co-SmackDown Women's Champions. I'm sorry. I forgot that was a stipulation added this past week.
Okay, that's what I thought it was. So, yeah, so that's my opinion on the storyline. I'll give you the first prediction on what you think is going to happen.
This is not easy because there's that wild card of Sasha Banks looming out there. So I ultimately think that Sasha will return here. They've set the table with Alexa and Nikki really saying that she doesn't have any friends. There's no one here to back her up. It perfectly sets the table for Sasha Banks to come out and even the odds when you have Nikki and Alexa getting the advantage on Bayley and potentially about to win. And you have Sasha come out to make the save, which, I mean, you could set up a tag team match. I don't think that's the way they're going to go. I actually think that in a very precarious position, you'll see Sasha come out and we'll all think that she's the white knight, the shining armor white knight coming out to make the save and save the day, ultimately only to turn on Bayley and allowing Alexa and Nikki to become the first ever co-SmackDown Women's Champions. WWE is obsessed with the phrase first time ever. And so I think that that kind of perks their ears a bit when they see the potential in this. Now, the logistics of it, well, how would it work, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I worry about that down the line. I think that having them become co-SmackDown Women's Champions would be interesting. I like the chemistry with Nikki and Alexa. I love Nikki all around right now. And having Bayley lose, because Bayley ultimately, beyond that promo, as you said, she hasn't done anything. She really hasn't done much. She just feels so disengaged from my interest. And I like Bayley as a performer, but her character over the last couple of years has gotten so much damage that I just don't feel a connection with her anymore. And they didn't capitalize on that promo she had with that shoot work promo that they had with Alexa. So I don't really care if Bayley loses the championship and then she could go into a full-fledged feud with Sasha Banks. saying, and Sasha's reasoning could be, you're the one that lost the champion, this SmackDown Women's Champion Tag Team Championships, which have also kind of got lost in the shuffle. You're the reason that I left. I got so depressed. I mean, there's a whole lot of ways you could go with this other than having her tag team with Bayley. I'm not going to bet my house on it, but I would venture to guess that Bayley loses because of Sasha Banks, and we get a full-fledged Sasha and Bayley feud, and we have the first ever SmackDown co-women's champions.
I hope that happens, but I'm going to actually – I don't think Sasha's going to get involved, or if she does, it will be to help Bayley keep the title. I don't think they're going to put the title on Alexa and Nikki. I think what's going to happen is – this is going to start to be the disintegration of Alexa and Nikki, and it may ultimately lead to a match at SummerSlam. But I think they're going to keep the title on Bayley for now. How she retains it, I'm still unsure whether or not Sasha will get involved or not, but I eventually think that it will lead to a Sasha and Bayley feud over the SmackDown Women's Championship. I think that just a big point of it is that ultimately Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross are still Raw stars. And I think that with Heyman and Bischoff coming into it, they will not want to kind of cross brands, especially with championships. So I'm not sure if Sasha will get involved or not. I do think that Sasha will return as a heel, whether or not she comes back as a babyface and turns right away, or she just returns full-blown as a heel. But I think that there's going to be some miscommunication between Alexa and Nikki that cost each other the match, and Bayley will retain the belt.
You laid out a situation that I think is just as realistic. You could very well be right. I mean, I'm glad that we don't agree on this one because both sound plausible. And you very well could be right where Sasha returns ultimately to help Bayley, but ultimately at the end of the day, in a couple of months, maybe at SummerSlam, which is the destination, you could have a Sasha Bayley program for the championship, or maybe it's a four-way. I mean, WWE loves their four-ways. You could have Nikki and Alexa fall apart, and you could have Sasha and Bayley fall apart, and they all just get into a big brawl, and it's a fatal four-way for the SmackDown Women's Championship at SummerSlam. That could very well be the case, too, where, you know, Sasha helps her here, but ends up turning on her in a couple of weeks to set up the four-way. But, I mean, yeah, so this is another one I would not put money on, but it's certainly an interesting one, and a ton of credit goes to Nikki Cross for this. All right, so moving down the line here we go. Braun Strowman versus Bobby Lashley in this last man standing match. What's your prediction and thoughts?
I think Strowman's going to win. I really don't think he can afford to lose this. I know he beat Lashley in Saudi Arabia, but I still think that Strowman's credibility has really taken a hit since that god-awful program with the Saturday Night Live guys. I think he needs this win. I think he has to come back and look dominant. I do like what Lashley has done on his own since separating from Leo Rush. So I wouldn't be opposed to Lashley winning because I don't dislike him as much as I used to, but I just think that Strowman needs this win. I think that they put Bobby Lashley over to look strong over Mysterio this past Monday night, and it was a good thing. Maybe not the expense of Rey Mysterio, but I like that they made Lashley look strong. And that way, Strowman coming back and toppling over Lashley will put him over even more. Maybe get him back on track to where he was a year ago, but I fully expect Strowman to come out with a victory here.
I'll second that too. Braun needs this win. Lashley is about as interesting at times as watching paint dry. I mean, it's just as big as he is and as chiseled as he is, he's so flat when it comes to personality, and that's always been his Achilles heel. I mean, I'm sure he's aware of that as well. He doesn't come across as like a true superstar. He comes across as just kind of this bodybuilder who's super athletic and great in the ring. But he's missing that X factor. And while Braun Strowman doesn't have that chiseled body and as much of athleticism as Bobby does, he's got more of a character and a connection with the fans. So Braun Strowman, I think, like you said, he kind of has to win here and get things back on track with him. He doesn't exactly have a great track record either, though. I mean, when you mentioned the Saturday Night Live guys, that was the bane of my existence. In addition to the year before he had like a child be his tag team partner, or was that, I don't know if that was a WrestleMania or not. I can't remember.
Nicholas.
Yeah, so he doesn't. I mean, when you look at Braun Strowman's track record of crappy things and terrible storylines, especially at the biggest show that they have in the company, Braun Strowman has certainly been damaged quite a bit. And this whole feud with Kevin Owens, where he was actually the heel but being portrayed as the babyface, and he was being a bully to Kevin Owens. I mean, there's just the things you could label about Braun in terms of creative go on, but. If they are going to redefine Braun Strowman and get him back on track, they need to have Braun Strowman come out here and dominate Bobby Lashley in probably what's going to be a very physical, very brutal, very heavy, hard-hitting match where they're going to go probably all over the arena. And I don't know, it probably will end in Braun Strowman giving Bobby Lashley the power slam off the stage, and Braun Strowman just makes it to his feet while, you know, Lashley is down for the 10 count. I think ultimately that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I think it will be a good match. They've shown promise with each other in this program in a few different matches. I'm interested to see what the finish is going to be. As we touched on when we first started the show, I think that they have big shoes to fill in terms of following up what happened on Raw last week. So I think WWE is going to go for like a huge finish here, whether or not, like you said, it's a big power slam off the stage or what have you, going through a bunch of tables. I think Strowman will eventually maybe just flip some big object on Bobby so he can't get up. But yeah, I'm actually excited for this match. They did a good job of hyping it up. I just really hope it doesn't fall flat and they really capitalize on it.
And be given enough time. I think that's always the key. So United States Championship, Ricochet versus AJ Styles. My quick thoughts on this. I know we've touched on both stars, and Ricochet is champion. I think the sweet short point of it is that Ricochet retains. I really think that he retains because he's got the fan support right now. He just won the championship for all intents and purposes. And as good as AJ Styles is as a heel, and you need to get him momentum, I think it's more important to keep the belt on Ricochet at this point. I don't think AJ needs the belt. He could still get heel heat even if he loses to Ricochet and Ricochet retains by being a sore loser and getting the heat back right away. I mean, if Ricochet ends up, I don't know, hitting his 720 and getting the pin, and then you have the sore losers come in and beat him down till a bloody pulp, and you that right instantly you get the heat back and you want to see AJ get his ass kicked again. So that could be the finish here. You could make a case of AJ Styles winning. He's freshly turned heel. You want a babyface chasing the champion. But with Ricochet being that guy that WWE has the rocket strapped to right now and the fans' reaction that he's getting, I think that will trump the AJ Styles heel turn needing a belt. So that's my thought.
Yeah, I think Ricochet will keep the belt. And in what capacity, I'm not sure. I think it could be like a disqualification finish where the Good Brothers get involved somehow. A disqualification on the part of AJ Styles or Ricochet gets disqualified somehow. I don't see this program ending at Extreme Rules, so I don't foresee a clean finish, but I do fully expect Ricochet to keep the belt. I think it's also just because that belt has just been passed around like nobody's business. You know, it was Samoa Joe, then went to Rey Mysterio, then back to Samoa Joe, and before WrestleMania, it had been bounced around as well. And I think you just got to keep it on Ricochet for at least another month, because when it just starts becoming a hot potato like you referenced before, it just kind of loses the credibility. So I would expect them, these guys, to have a rematch at SummerSlam, and I'm not quite sure what the finish is going to be, but I don't expect it to be clean, and I expect Ricochet to keep the belt.
Yes, that's a good point, too. I don't think that this is going to be the finish, the blow-off of their program. This needs to end at SummerSlam, and I'm fine with that because these two, I would think that most people would agree that the matches that these two put on are just great. I was going to say another word, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to rip off AJ Styles. So I think that this could be, this has a potential to be the match of the night. This really does. I mean, I think that most people would agree with that. Do I think it's going to be a five-star classic? I don't think so. But this has the potential to be the match of the night, even if it doesn't have weapons and crazy gimmicks. That's fine with me. I'm fine with a straight-up wrestling match, and that's what this is. And that's what this – it could evolve into at SummerSlam, maybe a no-holds-barred, a steel cage, I don't know, some wacky thing that they could add to it just to up the ante because it would be the blow-off of their program. So, this could easily be the match of the night, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and, you know, for me personally, AJ Styles is my favorite wrestler as of right now. So, and I'm happy to see him as a heel. I think he really needed a breath of fresh air. And I've always liked him more as a heel. I loved him when they first did the brand split again in 2016, and he had that feud going on with Dean Ambrose that really carried SmackDown for quite a few months there. And I think he's the perfect heel to take Ricochet to that next level, get Ricochet over with the fans, have him build off of that. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. And like I said before, I'm just really hoping and I'm expecting that this isn't the culmination to their feud.
No, I don't think it will be. I think WWE knows they have something here. Okay, here it comes. Roman Reigns and The Undertaker versus Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre in a no-holds-barred match. Who's your pick?
I got to go with Undertaker and Roman Reigns. I can't see that they're bringing back Undertaker to lose to Shane McMahon, Drew McIntyre. I think that this is ultimately a way to segue into McIntyre versus Taker at next year's WrestleMania, which is quickly becoming the worst kept secret in the world. I still am trying to wrap my head around why Taker came back. So it's kind of putting a stain on the whole match and my excitement for it. I'm still just wondering why The Undertaker just randomly showed up to help Roman Reigns, especially that Roman Reigns was the last guy to beat him at WrestleMania. But, I mean, I expect the match to be good. I expect Roman and Taker to come out on top. I'm praying that this is the culmination to the Shane and Roman feud. So typically, the heel doesn't usually go over when they're culminating a feud like that. So yeah, I expect Reigns and Taker to win and it eventually to lead to McIntyre and Taker down the road.
Yeah, this better be, like you said, the culmination of Roman and Shane. And Roman has taken his losses to Shane, so I think it's time to give him the receipt. So what my pick is Roman Reigns and Undertaker to win. That is the short of it is my pick for the win. I think that when the chips are down and it looks like Undertaker and Roman are going to win, maybe since it's a no-hold-barred match, you have Elias come in to interfere, in which Kevin Owens comes out to even the odds and, you know, stuns everybody or whatever, you know, stuns Elias to even the odds and throw him out of the ring and people go crazy for Kevin Owens. And then that evens the odds back to 2-on-2. And you ultimately get a Roman Reigns spear for the win. So I think that's going to put a nail in the coffin of Shane McMahon and Roman Reigns. And it will be Roman Reigns getting the pin on Shane McMahon. And I'm fine with it, too. As you said, The Undertaker returned. His explanation was, I'm the Reaper of Wayward Souls. Well, that could be applied to any single feud ever that he's ever had with anyone. That doesn't give me specifics. He got into a little bit of, well, you basically got a too big of an ego and it needs to come back and shut you up. I mean, that's kind of what he alluded to, but that wasn't enough for me, at least. I mean, I know that I said give me anything, but like that's too generic. Like, why would you come back to face or help a guy that beat you at WrestleMania? But out of, oh, well, I respect him because he beat me. But why now? I mean, why not defend somebody that Shane McMahon was beating up for months, like The Miz or whoever? I mean, why come back to defend Roman? There was just no specifics for that. There was no connection to that. So that's what I was missing. But yeah, I'm fine with Undertaker being kind of hidden in that tag team match. It requires less work. You know, you have younger guys in there from the Goldberg disaster that was last, was it last month, 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, at the Saudi Arabia event. It's fine. I expect a kind of, you know, Undertaker's greatest hits version of his moves, where it'll be, you know, you might get old school, you'll get a boot to the face, you might get snake eyes, you'll get a choke slam and a tombstone, and goodnight the lights.
Yeah, like you said, I think it's good that he's going to be sheltered in this role. I'm not expecting him to take that many bumps, as you said, that the match versus Goldberg was hard to watch. That's why I am kind of curious why it's no holds barred. I wouldn't expect them to put Undertaker in that match. That's why, like, I'm not really expecting it to be an actual no holds barred match as we're accustomed to. Like, a no holds barred match to me would be like Batista versus Triple H back in the day, where it ends with a Batista bomb on the steel steps, or their past one at this year's WrestleMania. So, like, I'm tempering my expectations in terms of the no holds barred. I don't expect a lot from Taker. I think it will be kind of a spot fest, like you said. It'll probably end with a tombstone on Drew McIntyre. One thing that I do expect from it is there's going to be a big dynamic between Taker and McIntyre. I feel like because a lot of this is built off of Shane and Roman, they're going to try and put in a lot of emphasis and story building on McIntyre and Roman. So I am looking for that, but I think it's kind of obvious that Roman and Taker will come away with the win.
Yeah, if you're going to do a Roman, or you're going to do a Drew McIntyre Undertaker program at WrestleMania, you need to plant some of the seeds now. Like, you have to. I know that WrestleMania is 6-8 months away, whatever. I understand that, but right now you still need to plant those seeds in the ground, even if you're not going to do anything with it for months. So that could be as something as just a look that Drew McIntyre gives Taker, and they just have a stare off as they're, you know, walking up the ramp in defeat. Or it could be as something as extreme as after Roman and Taker win, you know, Drew McIntyre ends up Claymore kicking Undertaker and just that single move, and he leaves. But whatever it may be, whether it's that extreme or the other, there needs to be something planted. We will know, based on what happens in this match, if it is indeed going to be Undertaker versus Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania, or, you know, if it's not WrestleMania, it could be Royal Rumble. I mean, we're all thinking it's WrestleMania. The rumors are all pointing to WrestleMania. I think ultimately we just need to take away, is this pointing to a match with these two at some point in the future? I think it will. I think Drew McIntyre would be a nice matchup for the Undertaker, because he's much more athletic and can sell a hell of a lot better in the ring than Goldberg can. And he's got a moveset 60 times that of Goldberg. And he can sell, he can flip, he can flop. He can make Undertaker look better than he is at this age. It's just a much better matchup for the Undertaker at this point in his career.
Yeah, and I just didn't understand from the beginning why they did Goldberg versus Taker. Like, okay, I get it. That, you know, it's a draw, it's two big massive names, but my God, it even put a stain on the Undertaker's reputation. And that's what I hated. And like, I remember the visuals in that match and how he just looked so unimpressed with the whole ordeal. But yeah, I think if Taker is to have another match, it would be for a guy that could carry him. And I think Drew McIntyre is great in the ring, and he's the perfect guy to do that, because I'm sure you remember Undertaker's match versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 33. I'm not counting the John Cena one at 34, because that was barely even a match, and they just did that to say that they did it. But his last actual match at WrestleMania with Roman Reigns, like, I don't know what your thoughts were on that, but that one was just atrocious.
I was there live for it in Orlando, and you know, the crowd was 100% in support of The Undertaker for the most part. So Roman was the de facto heel. But yeah, I mean, I remember him doing some tombstone attempts, reverse tombstone attempts that were just, I mean, I didn't want to watch. It just took away so much from the credibility of what was going on. And look, I respect The Undertaker the hell out of him. And I appreciate that he's still trying to be a small version of what he was, but it's to the point, like you said, that it's now staining the reputation of his character, and it's hard for me to remove that from his entire legacy. He's I know they're trying to get to that nice round number of 30 years of destruction, and you can promote the hell out of that, and you can market it and make t-shirts and sell pay-per-views and WrestleMania, and you can do all of that. But at what cost at this point? I mean, you are putting The Undertaker in situations that people don't want to see him in now. It's no longer one more match, one more match. It's please retire, I mean, out of respect. Not that people dislike The Undertaker. It's out of mercy. Like, we love you. We love what you've done. But Undertaker, I think it might be time to just ride off into the sunset gracefully and not really just stain your reputation that you know, and Goldberg has to be to blame too. I mean, that last match that they had was, when you see the Undertaker's face when he, you know, the match was finally over, it was just a look of like, this was a piece of, you know what, he clearly admitted through his facials that this was awful. And I mean, I'm sure you saw that too, that his expression was just of disgust.
Oh, it was brutal. That match is arguably one of the hardest matches I've ever had to watch. Like, because it was just, as soon as Goldberg knocked himself out or concussed himself, and what made it worse is that even if Goldberg was fully coherent, we weren't expecting, you know, God's gift to wrestling of a wrestling match. But then as soon as he concussed himself, then Taker dropped him on his head, and then he tried to jackhammer him, and he fell, and the ending chokeslam, like, it was just, it was brutal. And, okay, not so much Goldberg, because he was never really a grade-A wrestler, but Taker's reputation, like, just stop, like, come on, like, let the guy, like, let me remember him for what he was, you know? Like, I finally ran into this problem with Kurt Angle. Like, I loved Kurt Angle growing up, but, you know, my girlfriend would always laugh at me over his last run. Every time his music would hit, I'd be like, could we just let him retire in peace? Like, he was so bad at the end. And I'm not going to say Undertaker is as bad as Kurt Angle was, because Kurt Angle was just next level bad. Obviously, there's a lot of hard miles on his body, but, you know, Taker's fast approaching that. And I feel like when he's put in matches with some respectable opponents who can help carry him a bit, and as we said, Drew would be a good opponent for that, we're fast approaching the level for Taker where pretty soon, no matter who he's in the ring with, it could be AJ Styles, he's not going to look good. And out of respect for the character and the wrestler, I want to remember him what he was at his peak, like we do with Steve Austin, like we do with The Rock. And with Undertaker, it just feels with every passing match, it's just tainting his reputation as we go.
And I hate it. I really hate that feeling, because Undertaker is arguably the greatest of all time in any promotion in any era, is certainly one of the longest running ever. How many people can say that they've been doing it for 30 years? And yes, he hasn't been doing it full time for 30 years. I know that. But that he's been able to come back and still do it. I mean, even as embarrassing as it's been at times, you could really blame his opponent, but at the same time, Undertaker is the other half of that match, and I don't know. I mean, I think this is all just trying to get to that nice round number of 30, because the next Survivor Series that we do in 2020 would mark the 30-year anniversary. So I think that, and I've mentioned this before, but I think that ultimately you will have Undertaker return or retire at next year's WrestleMania, not this year at 36. It'll be at 37 that you will see Undertaker retire. So that's just my two cents on that. So, all right, well, let's move on a little bit to the WWE Championship of Kofi Kingston versus Samoa Joe. I'll give my thought on this, and then I'll toss it to you. I would love to see Samoa Joe champion. I think that he deserves a long, long, long run as a heel champion, because he could cut some scathing promos. He would be the guy that people hate, and not in a way that's cute and love to hate. It would be true heel heat that he could generate through his promos and his actions. He's just a nasty, believable guy that has one of the most believable voices and delivery in the business. But my pick here is still for Kofi to retain. I just don't believe that WWE has the guts to take it off of Kofi right now, and that the WrestleMania romance is still going on with WWE and the fans to a lesser extent now. They have an African-American champion, which certainly doesn't help with PR, or certainly does help with PR. So all of that tied together, man, I would love to see Samoa Joe champion, and maybe this continues into a program at SummerSlam where Joe ultimately wins it, and that's my thought, and that's my hope. So I'll accept a loss here for Samoa Joe if it's ultimately going to lead to a SummerSlam match where he wins. So my pick, in the short of it, Kofi retains. What about you?
Yeah, in the short answer, Kofi retains. I don't think they're ready to pull the plug on his title reign yet. With Samoa Joe, I'm with you. I think he would be a great heel champion. I think he's believable when he cuts the promos, and I think he's been very underutilized for the vast majority of his WWE run. But the thing here is like, it's been like a rinse and repeat with Kevin Owens, Dolph Ziggler, and Samoa Joe in terms of challenging for Kofi's title. They just viciously attack him from behind for pretty much no reason. Well, okay, they each have their individual reasons, whether it's Kofi's, Kevin saying he doesn't deserve it, or Dolph, it should have been me. And then they just get a title opportunity. And again, like, I like all three of those challengers individually, but it's just, it's hampered my, you know, me looking forward to the matches, because I'm just like, this doesn't make sense. You can't just attack a champion from behind and then get a title match. And I think it's even made it worse that they've done it three times in a row back to back to back with these guys. And it's just kind of like with Joe, and this even applies to his character a bit as well, where they're going to do this and then we just know what the outcome's going to be. Like, it's almost predictable. And with Joe, it's even more so a bit predictable that he's going to lose, at least in my opinion, because he just lost the U.S. title to Ricochet. And then the very next night, he's assaulting the WWE champion and is in line for a title opportunity. So he loses the belt, then assaults the champion, gets a title opportunity. And to me, it doesn't compute. And even though they're giving him the match, because I do think it's a good storyline, and ultimately, as much as it pains me to say, I think that Joe is more of just a placeholder champion. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's more than just a placeholder challenger. Sorry, not champion, challenger. It just feels like that's where they're going with this, just based on how the build to the match came about.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I just don't see them pulling the trigger on Joe. They and I mentioned that earlier too. Like, how is that in any world of sport the way that you earn the top championship opportunity? By just blindsiding and sucker punching the champion. That's how you do it, apparently, in WWE. And this is not just recently, though. I mean, this has had a long history of that's how you get a championship opportunity. You just attack the champion. I mean, they're backstage, sitting in the locker room, you just hit him, you know, just go out and start throwing some punches, and you got yourself a title opportunity, man. I mean, and as worthy as I think Samoa Joe actually is, I don't like the way that WWE presented him as earning that championship opportunity, because he simply attacked the champion from behind. So you're telling me the way you get a championship is to just do the most cowardly thing that you can and attack somebody from behind. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I just think that Samoa Joe is just another stepping block for Kofi Kingston on his journey that they're trying to make a WWE special out of, I'm sure. For Kofi Kingston and his struggle to the top and his struggle to stay on top. So, I mean, he just went to Ghana and he was like the hometown hero and all that. And they're making all these nice videos. And so I just, when you look at the PR point of it, which is a big part of it, I believe, I just don't think they have the balls to take it off of Kofi at this time. I think they're going to wait until fans are starting to go, okay, like, you know, we've had our fun. It was a nice run. He was our champion. Thank you for listening to us throughout the WrestleMania season and giving us what we want. It's time for a change. And I just don't think we're there. As much as I'm there, I've been ready for Joe to be champion since he debuted as Triple H's heavy a number of years ago. I'm ready. And I just don't think they're going to do it.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head with Kofi, how they're just kind of riding high and they're just using it as such a PR move. And as much as I like Kofi, that's what's made me kind of dislike his title reign, because it seems like every opponent of his hasn't been an actual opponent. They've just felt like stepping stones. And there are three guys that I really like in Dolph, Kevin, and now Samoa Joe. You know, Kevin, it didn't last too long. Dolph's kind of, they stretched out longer, and I appreciated that. But they've all, like, just, it's all been the same. Like, attack Kofi, say he doesn't deserve it, and then you lose. You attack Kofi, you say he doesn't deserve it, and then you lose. And it's just been kind of like this repetitiveness where you look at, let's say, the Raw Championship picture, and as much as I don't, am not very interested in it, at least you can say that they've taken the time to build an actual feud between Baron Corbin and Seth Rollins. And Baron Corbin won a number one contenders match to get to that point. And then he was kind of cheated in Saudi Arabia because the ref got involved. And now they've added a new layer. And as much as I'm not the biggest fan of the feud between Seth and Baron, at least it was built properly. And I could respect that. This one with Kofi, it's like the third big feud in 2 months. And the way it came about was the exact same way. So it's kind of hampered my ability to get invested into it.
Well, I mean, I just think that this probably is not their final match. I think this will culminate somehow at SummerSlam, as most of these matches will, other than our final match that we haven't spoken about. And that is Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch versus Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans, an Extreme Rules match of winners take all. So, I mean, I think that WWE did an exhaustive explanation of what that means over and over and over and over, as they do with every time there's a triple threat championship match, that the champion doesn't have to pin or submit to lose the championship, as if we don't know what the hell a triple threat is. They hammered this home every chance that they got, that, well, if Seth loses, that also means Becky loses her championship. Like, okay, we get it, and oh, it could cause a personal rift between the two. Look, Becky and Seth are not losing their championships, especially not to Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. As much as I've actually enjoyed Lacey Evans more than most, I don't think she's championship material yet. She certainly has a lot of in-ring improvement to focus on, that's for sure. We all know that. But her gimmick is one that is, it's not intolerable. Like, I think that she has potential. She feels different than the rest of the women on the roster, and I like that. I like the women's right. Her finish is nice. It's kind of, like I alluded to before, that it's the equivalent of Big Show's weapon of mass destruction, except it's Lacey Evans of the women's division doing it. I'm fine with it, but I don't think that either of these individuals deserve to be champion right now. It's the Seth and Becky show. My only hope is that we see Becky and Seth just stop being on air together all the time. And this is after Extreme Rules. They just pretend that neither one exists, and they go their separate ways in their own separate programs. I don't need to see lovey-dovey Seth try to be cute with his girlfriend and force chemistry on air anymore after Extreme Rules.
Yeah, my interest for this match is really low. I think I alluded to that at the beginning of the show. But, I mean, I think that Seth and Becky ultimately retain. I love Lacey Evans. She's actually up there with my favorite women on the roster right now. But she's not ready. She still has some in-ring work to do. But I really like the work she does with her promo. She has one of the more believable characters. So I think she has a bright future, just not quite now. Baron Corbin, well, he's just not a world champion material. I think he's done adequately in this program. I think he's a good in-ring worker. I like his moveset. I think he's entertaining to watch in the ring. I think he has pretty good chemistry with Seth, but I don't think they're going to ever pull the trigger on him as world champion, at least not anytime soon. So I fully expect Seth and Becky to win here. In saying that, I'm with you. They have to separate Seth and Becky. They've been almost a chore to watch together. I think you alluded to it on your last week podcast, those stupid sounds like Becky was making backstage to be like, like, it was just so, it was unbearable to watch. And like you said, they're forcing their relationship on air, and it's coming off as weird. And, you know, to my knowledge, they've only been dating for a few months now. So it must almost be awkward for them on a personal basis to try and act all lovey-dovey if you've only been in an actual relationship for a few months. So you know, I'm not even putting the, you know, the onus on them. I'm kind of blaming WWE, like, you know, just give them a chance to breathe here. Let them be their own characters and just, you know, let them go their separate ways, because I think both of their championships and their characters have taken kind of a hit ever since they got paired together.
Yeah, it has. I mean, they cannot continue to melt together the Women's Championship and the Universal Championship. They deserve their own time with their own stories and their own matches, and this should be a one and done for these two after they retain their belts. I don't need any swerves here. I don't need any cute booking by Vince McMahon. I don't need anything that's like, oh, we're going to shock people. They think this is so predictable. Look what we're going to do. I don't need any of that here. I don't want this match unpredictable. I don't say that a lot. I do not want unpredictability in this match. I want it straightforward. Becky and Seth easily dispose of well, probably not easily. Everything is a struggle. But I think that it will be a very decisive, declarative victory by Seth and by Becky. They hold their belts high as the pay-per-view goes off the air, and that's fine. I don't need any nonsense booking in this match just for the shock value.
Yeah, it's just got to be straight to the point. They've got to go over clean, and it just has to be the end of the program. They've got to go – all four of them actually have to just go their separate ways. I don't want to see any of these four together in any capacity anymore. Maybe you could keep Baron and Lacey together in some way. But besides that, they all need kind of a breath of fresh air. I'm anxious to see who are going to be the new challengers for those two Raw titles leading into SummerSlam. This has to be the final blow off to both of the programs, both women and men's side here. I think it will be a good match, but it has to be a decisive victory for Seth and Becky here.
Yeah, there can't be any funny business or any like fluke finishes, none of that. No referees that are coming in to screw Baron Corbin, none of that. It just needs to be a straightforward stomp to Baron Corbin as maybe in tandem as Lacey Evans is also getting tapped out by Becky in the disarmer, and they're both victorious at the same time, and we just get a happy ending, and this program just mercifully comes to an end. As you said, though, that I expect this to be a very quality match. I mean, all of these men and women in the match are very good, so I expect the quality of the match to be very good. But I'm not expecting anything more than that, and I don't need any fancy smanchy stuff. I just want them to just move on. That's what this match should have, a subtitle called Move On. I mean, because that's what this needs to be about, and hopefully it is. So, Anthony, listen, it's been a blast, and I think we always do. I mean, we cover everything from A to Z, but is there anything that we didn't discuss that you want to?
No. It's I think we got it all, and I think we're gonna have much more to talk about on our next show, because in 3 weeks from now, I think that'll be right in the heart of SummerSlam season. So I'm looking forward to that one, but I think we really got everything here.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about it, and we will be. Yeah, you said we'll be in the middle of SummerSlam season and past Extreme Rules, but I'm expecting a very highly anticipated SummerSlam, given the new direction and new management that we have in WWE. So we will certainly have a lot to talk about, and I'm looking forward to it in 3 short weeks. 3 weeks seems to go by really, really quick. I mean, I know it's every 3 weeks. It's almost once a month, but it flies by, and I don't want summer to fly by, which when you know as much as I do, when we live in the North, summer does not last long.
No, in a blink of the eye, it really comes and goes. So, yeah, I'm taking advantage of this heat.
I know, and people complain. I'm like, do you understand? You understand how quickly the heat comes and goes in New York, and especially up in Canada? I'm just like, you understand in like a month and a half, you're going to start seeing leaves change, and it's just, oh, God. So, all right. Well, Anthony, listen, it's always a blast to talk to you. And we will see you in just a few short weeks. Of course, we'll be in contact as SummerSlam starts to close in, and obviously with the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So we will definitely be in touch. But before you go, let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter.
My handle's at AdaMarco25. I always caution people that it is flooded with hockey-related content, But now that we're in the middle of summer, I will save you some of that pain.
So, okay, so it's mostly wrestling now. So for you wrestling fans out there that may not like hockey, don't worry now. Until hockey season returns, you should be safe, right?
Exactly. You have a bit of a 2-3 months of grace period here.
All right, so awesome. And well, thank you, Anthony, and we will definitely be in touch this Sunday.
All right, man. Looking forward to it. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Take care.